Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with LearnVisualStudio.net. In this lesson, we'll continue learning some of the specifics of the XAML syntax in just a bit. But first, we need to examine how the XAML is used to lay out pages in the Grid app template. So as you can see, we're back into the Contoso Cookbook project, and what I want to do is look at the XAML that gives each page its distinctive appearance with that title area at the top and with the rows and the columns of information that are grouped together and so forth. So for example, if we take a look at this first page, the grouped items page.xaml, recall that that's the first page that loads whenever our application is run. If we look at the source for that file, and you can see that I've already done this, I've used the code outlining feature to roll up the various parts of this page. And what I want to do is just step through each of these major sections or major parts. And so you use the little plus and minus buttons next to these little code areas to roll them up, right? And then you can hover over the ellipsis and it'll show you all of the code that's behind this rolled up section between line 40 and 83, for example. All right? But at the very topmost level, you can see that we start off with something called the layout aware page. And you can see that it uses this word common. If we look down deeper, we can see that there's a namespace of common. Now, this is a little bit different than what we would have seen in the previous video where we were looking at the XAML cheater's guide. This time, it has a using statement with the name of a namespace, contosocookbook.common. And so this is much like how you might expect to see this defined in C#, where we're importing a namespace with the using statement. And this would be the topmost or the project level namespace. And then there's this other namespace called common. Now I just happen to know that these correspond with the folder names that have been added to the Grid app template. And if I were to drill down into the common folder, I would expect to see something called layout aware page. And in fact, I do see layout aware page right here. And this layout aware page, as you can see, it is derived from page. When we looked at our XAML cheater, it uses a page object. And inside that page object, we define our layout grid and so forth. But here, we're using a special version of page, a page that's been subclassed called layout aware page, and it has superpowers, okay? And essentially, the superpowers are making it layout aware, and we'll talk about what that is in just a moment. But maybe at a higher level, it'd be helpful to understand pages and how they relate to each other. So this diagram should help. So as you can see, a page sits inside of an idea called a frame. And this frame is an object that represents the viewable area of our application. The application loads pages into and out of the frame. The frame allows for pages to be swapped in and out and allows you to navigate between pages. And then it also keeps a history of which pages you've already navigated through. So that's how we were able to go from the group items page.xaml. And then we clicked into the group detail page. And then if you click one of the items on the group detail page, you go to the item detail page. And then there's always this little arrow button. It was the back button. I can keep clicking the back. And what it will do is navigate back through our history and bring us back to the first page that we launched in our application. Also, the page has events that fire whenever it's being navigated to or navigated away from. So we as programmers can write code at those important events. And if you remember from the XAML cheater, when we wrote code, we wrote it on this onNavigatedTo event. So this says, hey, we've navigated to this page. Okay, wait a second, let me write some code here to do something before the user even gets an opportunity to interact with the application. That's what the onNavigatedTo event does for us, all right? So a layout aware page derives from page. It's a subclass of the page class. And it's been enhanced to include functionality that listens for changes to the layout of the app. And there's two key situations when it springs into action. The first is when the user goes from full screen mode to snapped mode or vice versa. At that point, the layout aware page is notified. Do you remember in the first video when I ran the finished version of the Contoso cookbook, and we saw along the left-hand side of the screen a modified version of the Contoso cookbook that was oriented everything in a vertical fashion as opposed to big tiles that were laid out in a horizontal fashion. So the layout aware page is notified of the snapped state of the application, and so that it can make and accommodate a different layout, okay? And then secondly, whenever the user is on a tablet and that tablet's orientation changes from portrait to landscape or vice versa, okay? In these cases, it notifies the layout aware page, which can make which can activate a different layout for the data for that given page. In both of these cases, it allows us, the programmers, to redefine the layout for the app to accommodate this new change in screen real estate in the size or the orientation or what have you. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. But it has something to do with, we scroll all the way down here, this visual state manager, and we'll get to that again in just a second. But the layout aware page also has, if you look throughout its body, it has some other things too in this in these rolled up areas, all right? And one of them is called navigation support, visual state switching, process lifetime management. It also has something called a default view model. And this is going to help with data binding from the data source, which is in a text file called JSON. We talked about that briefly at the very beginning. And it allows us to then bind that data to whatever we see in the user interface in the XAML page elements. And we'll see that manifested in just a couple lessons from now, so stay tuned for that. So when you think of a layout aware page, think of a page in the app that's smart enough to know how much is viewable by the user based on the snapped state of the app, the orientation of the device, and the screen resolution, and then report that back to the programmers, to us, so that we can make decisions about how best to render the content based on the dimensions that we have available now, okay? All right, so to recap, we're dealing with a page, and a page is a container for a given layout of our app. Again, the page is part of a navigation system that, along with the frame, allows us to navigate to and from the various pages in our apps. But this isn't just a run-of-the-mill page. We noted that this specific page that we're using on our the three that come with the Grid App template, it's a special type of page. It's a layout-aware page that knows when the size or the orientation of the app has been changed due to snapping or orientation and allows us, the developers, to provide alternate page layouts for those situations. So let's go back then to our grouped items page. Now that we understand what we're working inside of, it's just a subclassed version of page. What else is in here? Well, the next section is this page.resources section. For now, by default, the only thing that's defined inside of this section is this collection view source, and we'll talk about its purpose a little bit later. But at a nutshell, it's simply used for binding to data, and it will become more important to us as we pull recipes and photos into our app and then data bind to them on the user interface. I'm tempted to talk about it right now, but again, it's not pertinent at the moment because we just want to talk about XAML for layout purposes for our app's user interface. So let's just table the conversation about data binding to a little bit later in this series, all right? So let's roll that back up. And then we're going to go to the grid definition. And so, again, this grid is the outermost grid that takes up the entire viewable area, and it's intended to be a layout grid. And just like we saw in the XAML cheater, the grid is just a collection of columns and rows. It encompasses the entire viewable area of the page. We could define both columns and rows, but in this case, all it does is define two rows. A row that's 140 tall, pixels tall, and then the second row that uses the remaining vertical space. After that, inside of that layout grid, we see a grid view and a list view, as well as another grid. Let's start with this grid at the bottom. This is what gives our title and the little back button definition, okay? And so we are creating a grid, and we can see because that grid inside of the layout grid has no grid.row or grid.column defined, it is in the leftmost row, and since there's only one column, that makes it easy, right? But inside of that grid, there are two column definitions created. One that will be used for the button that has a little arrow inside of it, okay? And then in the other column, there is a text block with the name of our app. And we can see that there's this binding syntax, we'll come back to this in just a moment, called app name. And if you remember a couple of lessons ago in the app.xaml, we changed app name from Contoso's cookbook, all one word, and we put a space in between it. And so we're going to have to learn a little bit about that syntax that's being used here. Whoops, where am I? There we go. How does it use this static resource and this other binding syntax, right? We'll get to that in a little bit. But that's the use of this grid. And now we have two other grids. There's a grid view and a list view. Now, only one of these will be displayed at a given time, depending on whether the app is in a snapped state or not. Again, we're going to talk about snapping in much later in the series, like lesson 15 or so, or thereabouts. But in a nutshell, the layout-aware page knows the current snap state. Then it communicates that to the Visual State Manager. And if we look at the Visual State Manager, it defines a series of visual states for our app. So for example, a full screen landscape, full screen portrait, the filled, which is kind of the larger portion of the snap state, or the snapped version, which is the smaller portion of the snap state, as we saw it in that small left-hand column. Now specifically, if we look at the sections near the bottom, we can see that whenever the app goes into a snap state, the layout-aware page will make this visual state active. And so there will be a number of actions that need to occur, and this defines the actions that have to happen. In this case, it will make the item list view visible and the item grid view collapsed. All right, so item list view, I'm sorry, will be visible, and then the item grid view will be collapsed. And so what that will basically say is, take the grid view and all the definition that we see here and collapse it, hide it. But this list view, show it. By default, it's set to collapsed. We don't see it right now in the visual designer. We won't see it until we go into a snap state. Okay? At which point these actions are fired off and this visibility property is set to collapsed for the grid and then visible for the list view. So for now, let's close this up. We're going to focus on this grid view, since this is what we see as we run the application in its kind of default mode. Now from a layout perspective, there are a few attributes of the grid view that are important. Actually, these two attributes are important. Notice that we don't see grid.row equal to 1 like we would expect to see, because it kind of appears to be in the first row, or row one rather, the second row. Instead, we're saying take up the entire row span of both rows, but set the padding 116 from the left-hand side, 137 from the top, and that setting is pushing the grid view down on the page to make it appear as though it is beneath the first row, which contains our navigation elements, all right? And then it sets a 40 and 46 for the right and bottom, respectively. And so you might be wondering, well, what exactly is a grid view? Well, a grid view is a special kind of control that is both layout aware and data aware. And so the data portion of this is the important part. As you can see, it's serving a couple of purposes. It allows us to bind to a hierarchy of data. You have a grouping of items and then the individual items that are grouped into that group, okay? And so that's accomplished through these properties, the item source and the item template. And before we get into the specifics of what's being bound to and how it's being bound, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the binding syntax that we see all over this project. We constantly are seeing something being bound to something, right? Static resource, binding, static resource, binding, static resource. Okay, what does all that mean? Well, basically these curly braces and the information inside define binding expressions. And there are three or four main kinds of binding expressions that you're going to see. The first type is binding to dynamic data. In other words, to make a connection between some collection of data and connecting that to where it will be displayed in the elements on the page. So in this case, we're binding to dynamic data, the Contoso cookbook data that's saved in a file and retrieved at runtime, and that then dynamically data bound to the items and groupings of our grid view. And secondly, there's a variation on dynamic binding. Instead of binding a control to external data, you bind a control to values of a second control. So for example, take a look at this code on screen. You can bind a text block control to a slider control. So as the slider value changes, the text block's text value will change to reflect the slider's current setting. Okay, and so off camera, what I did was I went ahead and implemented the code we saw on the slide into our XAML Cheater application so you can see it in action. And so at the very bottom of the stack panel we were working with the buttons, I added the slider and the text block. And let's just watch this as it works. And so as I move the slider, you can see it makes the changes to the text block. And it was all with declarative code. We didn't have to write any C# to make that to work. So that's the second kind of dynamic binding. The third is binding to static data. So for example, when we saw a little bit earlier, and let's get back into our Contoso cookbook, when we were looking at the grid, for example, we bound the text attribute to a static resource with the key of app name. And when we look at that key, it's defined in a series of resource dictionaries, and its key is app name, and so whatever the value it is statically bound into the header for our page. And so then the fourth binding is to styles and templates. And you can think of styles like cascading style sheets in a sense. In CSS, you create a name style to change the font face, the size, the color, the background, and so on. Well, the same is true here. You define a style once, and then you apply that style whenever you need it. So that's the notion of a style, and we can see it in use, for example, here, where we are using the page header text style. And if we wanted to see this in action, what we can do is actually go to the miscellaneous category once we have our mouse cursor inside of a given control. And we can go down to the property that's being bound to. You can see it's bound because it has a green box around the property value. And I'm going to just click the little green box off to the right-hand side and select Go to Source. And this will open up another file that contains the styles and templates for our application. Now, in this case, you can see that it opens up something in the common folder called standardstyles.xaml. This standard styles is referenced here within the merge dictionaries collection of our app.xaml. It's pulling that in. So what I'd recommend is if you ever wanted to create your own styles, don't modify this standard styles.xaml. Simply copy this, create a copy of it, and paste it below it, and then create that file name in your common directory, and then add your new styles to that, okay? But that's a short aside. Here we can see that a style has a number of setters. So we're going to set this property to this value on this data type, this text block. Okay, so this applies to text blocks. And we're going to set the text wrapping property, the vertical alignment, the margin, and so on. But notice that it's also based on another style called header text style. And if I were to try to navigate to header text style, and I think the best way to do this, I think the best way to do is just hit Control C and then Control F, and I'm going to add a quotation mark around so we can find it. We can see that this applies also to text blocks, and it sets the font size, weight, height, and other rendering information, but it too is based on something called baseline text style. So if we were to search for that, we would see that it is also a target type of text block, and it sets the line height and the line stacking strategy and other information. But it too is based on a text style called basic text style. And so if we search for that, we can see that it sets the foreground, font size family, text trimming. So all these styles are just layered on top of each other. And so you can reuse definitions of styles in styles, which use those as definitions of styles and so on until you get back to what we were originally looking for, which was the header. So I'm just going to use this back arrow to keep navigating back till we get to the header text style. Great. So styles allow you to set attributes of a given object or class or a target type, in this case, a text block. And a template is kind of similar to a style, but in addition to setting aesthetic properties, you're also defining layout. So let's dive a little bit deeper into this and take a look back on our group items page, .xaml, and we're looking inside of our grid view. And we want to see what each of the individual items, how they're being bound, and specifically what template is being used to render them on the page. What gives us this image and then this little opaque area below it, the title, and then in a lighter font, this subtitle? Well, that's all defined in this item template. Notice it's a static resource that we're binding to. And so here again, if I want to see the definition for this, I'm going to find the item template in the miscellaneous area in the properties window for the given item, in this case a grid view. And I'm going to click the little green button to the right side and click go to source. And now we're looking at the standard 250 by 250 item template. So I can bring it up into view, and we're isolated just on one item. And here you can see that each of the little items, each of the little what will ultimately become recipe items, are grids. It's a grid. And it has an image that it's binding to. So this will be data that will be poked into the source property for the image control. And then below it, or at the very bottom, there will be the stack panel. And the stack panel will have this list view item overlay background theme brush. I would expect the opacity to be like 30% or 50% so that we can see through it, right? And then there is a text block that will contain the title. And notice that it has, again, styles that itself are, that it's referencing. And then the subtitle below it. And we can adjust, for example, the height of this opaque panel by changing this from like 60 to 30, and we can see it makes that opaque panel a little bit smaller. I'm going to set it back to 60. And so we notice that we've been doing a lot of work inside of the standard styles.xaml. Just to be clear, styles and templates could be defined inside of the page itself. So back here on the grouped items page, you can define them in a little area here at the top with page.resources. However, that would only make the styles available in that single page. The preferred way to do it is to devote one or more external files for this purpose. Each resource has its own name or key, as well as a XAML definition, like we saw in that standard styles.xaml. And then when compiled, the Windows XAML parser will replace the default attribute values of one or more XAML elements with those that are associated with the static resource's binding name. All right, so it all comes together at compilation time. And just to be clear here, this resource dictionary section, these resource dictionaries are just a dictionary collection of resources. And a resource in this context is either a style or a template definition or some text or some setting, something that we will need later on and reference throughout the application potentially many times. So just to kind of recap this, let's go back to the grouped items page and focus on these two lines of code. And basically what we're saying here is that we want to take data from a static resource called Grouped Items View Source. And we're going to bind to it so that each item that's in that source will be rendered using this standard 250 by 250 item template. Now, you might be wondering, hey, where's this grouped items view source defined? Well, that's back up here in the page resources. If we look at the collection view source, that's the name of this collection view source. And if we read this little header, it'll give us a clue. Collection of grouped items displayed by this page. Bound to a subset of the complete list, and we'll look at what that means a little bit later. But essentially what we're going to do here is retrieve from the default view model defined on the layout aware page something called groups. And we can see here an attribute called data context. It's binding to this default view model. If we look at the code behind the C# version of our grouped items page, we'll see in the very few lines of code that it has, a default view model keyed into this term groups that has the sample data groups that's pulling from something called sample data source that we'll get to. So we're saying grab data, put it in this little container, this default view model, and specifically put it in a container, a subcontainer called groups. Then on the other side, we're going to bind to that default view model. We're going to pull from groups, and those groups are going to be in this grouped items view source. Then we're going to use that grouped items view source as the item source to grab each of the items on this page, and for each item, use the standard 250 by 250 item template. Phew. Okay. So I realize that we covered a lot of ground in the last several videos, especially this video. You might want to review this video and then make sure to use Bing.com to search for anything that really didn't make a whole lot of sense. Hopefully we'll clear things up as we continue to work through these ideas throughout the rest of this series of lessons. All right, so next we're going to continue and finish up exercise number one in the hands-on lab, and then we'll move on beyond that. Okay, so we'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you. Thank you.